Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
What happened to Henrietta Lacks represents a long, long history of experimentation and exploitation of Black people in biomedical research, grounded in the myth of biological race that white scientists invented to justify enslaving Black people.
The family of Henrietta Lacks, a Black cancer patient whose cells were taken by Johns Hopkins University Hospital without her consent in 1951, has settled with pharmaceutical company Thermo Fisher Scientific. We'll speak to University of Pennsylvania Professor Dorothy Roberts about Henrietta Lacks and other issues, including the criminalization of pregnancy following the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Then to the pioneering legal scholar Kimberly Crenshaw. We'll talk to her about attacks on the teaching of history by Florida governor and presidential candidate Ron DeSantis and others.
Nobody can be surprised when suddenly this effort to stump out critical race theory turns out to be an effort to make anti-racism unspeakable, to make queer studies undoable, to make intersectionality one of the most widespread concepts across the disciplines, something that college-directed students cannot take or can only take if the states allow them to.
We'll also speak to Professor Crenshaw about her new book, Say Her Name, Black Women's Stories of Police Violence and Public Silence. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Niger, leaders of the military coup have shut down the country's airspace, citing possible imminent military action from their neighbors after a Sunday deadline to reinstate the ousted president, Mohamed Bazoum, expired. The deadline was issued by the West African bloc, ECOWAS, which has condemned the coup alongside international powers, including the U.S. and the former colonizer, France. But many Nigerians have voiced support for the military leaders and strongly reject any foreign intervention. Protesters have been taking to the streets since the July 26 coup.
Qu'avant d'atteindre le palais présidentiel,
if ECOWAS or French forces decide to attack our country before reaching the presidential palace, they will have to walk over our bodies, spill our blood, and we'll do it with pride. Because we don't have another country. We only have Niger. Since July 26th, our country has decided to take charge of its independence and sovereignty, and this is our way of demonstrating it.
Media reported this weekend Niger's coup generals requested defense help from the Russian mercenary Wagner Group in the face of possible military intervention. Burkina Faso and Mali, which also have been taken over by the military following coups, previously warned any attacks on Niger would be tantamount to a declaration of war against their countries as well. Niger is a major supplier of uranium to France and the European Union. Ukraine says Russian strikes have killed three people in Kherson and Kharkiv. Meanwhile, Moscow said it shot down a drone near the capital Sunday, while Ukrainian attacks hit bridges linking Crimea with Russian-occupied parts of Kherson. On Friday, Ukrainian drones hit a Russian tanker in the Black Sea and a Russian port. On Saturday, Russian strikes hit a blood transfusion center, which Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called a war crime. The intensified attacks on the battlefield come as officials from around the world met in Saudi Arabia for peace talks. 40 different countries were at the talks, including the U.S., China, and nations from the global south. Russia was not present. Ukraine and other countries hailed the talks as progress, though few concrete steps were taken. Ukrainian peace activist Yuri Shelyachenko was charged by the Ukrainian government with justifying Russian aggression days after his apartment was raided and searched. Shelyachenko, member of the Ukrainian pacifist movement and World Beyond War, has vocally opposed any escalation of the conflict through fighting or sanctions. He spoke Sunday of his persecution by Ukrainian authorities.
During a year, security service secretly surveilled me. tried to find any links with Russian agents, found nothing, but still convinced I am the enemy because of my advocacy of peace by peaceful means, of ceasefire and peace talks to stop senseless bloodshed and destruction.
Yuri Shelyashenko also said he would remain in Ukraine and continue his peace work from behind bars if he's imprisoned. You can see our interviews with Yuri at democracynow.org. A Russian court sentenced prison opposition leader Alexei Navalny to another 19 years after convicting him of extremism charges during a closed-door trial. The Kremlin critic and nationalist politician, who's already serving an 11-year term, said the charges are politically motivated and asked his supporters to keep resisting Putin's government and its crackdown on dissent. Navalny wrote of the new sentence, quote, "The number does not matter. Like many political prisoners, I am sitting on a life sentence." In Pakistan, former Prime Minister Imran Khan has been arrested and sentenced to 3 years in prison for illegally selling state gifts. Khan has denied this and the dozens of other charges that were brought against him since he was removed in a no-confidence vote in April of last year. Before his arrest, Khan called on his supporters to keep protesting.
I have only one appeal. Don't sit silently at home. I am struggling for you and for the country and your children's future.
Khan's lawyer has accused Pakistan of undeclared martial law in their politically motivated targeting of the former leader, who will likely be barred from national elections that are supposed to take place this year. In other news from Pakistan, a train derailment in the southern Sindh province Sunday killed at least 30 people and injured dozens. The death toll could rise as rescue operations continue. In India, opposition Congress Party leader Rahul Gandhi has been reinstated to parliament after the Supreme Court suspended his defamation conviction. Gandhi was suspended and sentenced to 2 years in prison in March for criticizing Prime Minister Narendra Modi. The suspension of the case means Gandhi will be able to run against Modi in the 2024 election. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed at least five Palestinians over the weekend. Three people were shot dead Sunday after Israeli soldiers opened fire at their vehicle at the Jenin refugee camp. Just 2 days earlier, 18-year-old Mahmoud Abu San was killed by Israeli forces during a raid in the city of Tulkarem. Later that Friday, 19-year-old Kusai Matan was murdered by armed Israeli settlers who stormed the village of Berka near Ramallah. Two suspects have been arrested, praised by Israel's National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gavir as heroes. Leila Ghanem, governor of Ramallah, cited the complicity of the international community in Israel's abuses against Palestinians as she spoke following the killing.
Today there was a real massacre in Burqa. The settlers burnt cars and the child was assassinated from zero distance, according to witnesses. And we have to call him a child and use the correct words and labels for these crimes.
Saudi Arabia is urging its citizens to immediately leave Lebanon in recent violent clashes at the largest Palestinian refugee camp located in the southern city of Sidon. The UK has also advised people to avoid most travel in Lebanon, while Kuwait warned its citizens to avoid areas of security disturbances. At least 13 people have been killed after fighting erupted between rival Palestinian groups inside the overcrowded Ain el-Hilweh refugee camp last week. At least six migrants have died, including a woman and her one-year-old child, after three boats sank in the Mediterranean Sea, one off Tunisia's Kerkenna Islands and two near the Italian island of Lampedusa. Dozens of people are still missing. Most of the migrants are from sub-Saharan Africa. Separately, Tunisian authorities said they'd found the bodies of another 10 people on a beach near the port city of Sfax, which has become a hub for migrants hoping to reach Europe for refuge. Here in the United States, a federal appeals court Friday struck down a Jim Crow-era law in Mississippi that permanently revoked voting rights for people with certain felony convictions. The conservative panel ruled 2-1 the law, which disproportionately affects Black Mississippians, is unconstitutional, writing, quote, "In last 50 years, a national consensus has emerged among the state legislatures against permanently disenfranchising those who've satisfied their judicially imposed sentences and thus repaid their debts to society. Mississippi stands as an outlier among its sister states, bucking a clear national trend in our nation against permanent disenfranchisement," unquote. A Texas judge ruled Friday Texas's abortion ban is too restrictive in cases of dangerous pregnancy complications, and doctors must be allowed to perform abortions in such instances without risk of criminal prosecution. Hours later, Texas's attorney general's office filed an appeal, effectively blocking the order. Though the initial order was blocked, the Center for Reproductive Rights and the women who brought the case celebrated the ruling and said the plaintiff's testimonies help shine a spot light on the cruelty of the law. The trial is expected to clarify the use of abortions in medical emergencies, scheduled for March next year. Meanwhile, in Ohio, early voters are turning out in droves in a special election over a Republican-led measure that would make it harder for Ohio voters to pass constitutional amendments, including a ballot measure which would guarantee Ohioans the constitutional right to abortion. The final day of voting is tomorrow, Tuesday. The FDA Friday approved the first pill to treat postpartum depression, which affects around 1 in 7 people after childbirth. Doctors say only 10% of those receive adequate care. Zuranolone, to be sold under the name Zurzuvae, is manufactured by Biogen and Sage Therapeutics and is taken for just 2 weeks. But mental health experts warn, while the pill could help many people, it's not a cure-all for postpartum mood disorders. Behavioral scientist Judith Blanc noted the many contributing factors, including poor institutional support and policies for new parents with women of color and of lower socioeconomic status, being the most vulnerable. Blanc told the Washington Post, quote, "We need longer maternity leave, more flexible work schedules, and universal child care," she said. Here in New York City, police have charged a 17-year-old with murder as a hate crime for the fatal stabbing of O'Shea Sibley at a Brooklyn gas station late last month. 28-year-old Sibley, a black gay man, was a dancer and choreographer. He and his friends were dancing in Beyoncé's Renaissance album as they filled up on gas on a Saturday night when they were approached and harassed by a group of people who told them to stop dancing. The group yelled homophobic and racist slurs as the dancers defiantly carried on before the teen stabbed O'Shea Sibley. Vigils and protests have taken place across New York City since then. Mourners gathered at the Mobile Station Friday, where Sibley was killed, while others have posted videos of themselves voguing in tribute to O'Shea Sibley. The influential Harvard Law professor and civil rights scholar Charles Ogletree has died at the age of 70. At one of the country's most prominent law schools, he taught the future president and first lady, Barack and Michelle Obama. He also represented Anita Hill when she accused U.S. Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas of sexual harassment, defended rapper Tupac Shakur in criminal and civil cases, and fought for reparations for survivors of the 1921 Tulsa race massacre. In 2010, Ogletree joined us on Democracy Now! To discuss his book, The Presumption of Guilt, The Arrest of Henry Louis Gates Jr. and Race, Class, and Crime in America.
The title, The Presumption of Guilt, is to remind us we presume guilty of some people without knowing the facts. We do it based on race, on class, on clothing, on where you drive, where you walk, where you shop, where you eat. And that's why the presumption of guilt is the title, to remind people, let's not make judgments about people. Let's judge them by, as I said before, the content of their character, not skin color. That's the problem.
Harvard Law professor Charles Ogletree, dead at the age of 70. Donald Trump has been given a deadline of 5 p.m. today, Monday, to respond to special counsel Jack Smith's request for a protective order. District Judge Tanya Chutkan, who is presiding over Trump's case related to the overturning of the 2020 election, issued the deadline as the Justice Department attempts to curb Trump's public comments, including potentially confidential evidence that could intimidate witnesses. On Friday, Trump posted on his Truth Social site, "If you go after me, I'm coming after you." Separately, Donald Trump pleaded not guilty Friday to additional charges in the federal case around his mishandling of classified documents. A woman is suing the city of Detroit after she was wrongfully arrested for robbery and carjacking over faulty facial recognition technology. Portia Woodruff was 8 months pregnant and getting her two children ready for school when 6 police officers showed up at her home in February to take her into custody. Woodruff was detained and questioned for at least 11 hours before being charged and released on a $100,000 bond. She says she started having contractions in jail, had to be taken to the hospital after her release due to dehydration. The case was dropped a month later. Woodruff is the first woman known to be falsely identified as a criminal suspect due to facial recognition technology. At least five other people have also been wrongfully arrested due to the technology, all of them black. Activists have long warned facial recognition technology and artificial intelligence would exacerbate racial inequity and policing, disproportionately impacting black people. And Sunday marked the 78th anniversary of the U.S. dropping of the world's first atomic bomb on Hiroshima, killing some 140,000 people. 3 days later, August 9, 1945, the U.S. dropped another atomic bomb on the Japanese city of Nagasaki, killing at least 74,000 people. During the annual Hiroshima Peace Memorial Ceremony, Japanese leaders called on nations around the world to work towards nuclear disarmament. This is Hiroshima Mayor Kazumi Matsui.
Leaders around the world must confront the fact that the theory of nuclear deterrence is folly, and that it is necessary to quickly begin concrete efforts to lead us from our harsh reality to an ideal world.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I am Amy Goodman. Coming up, the family of Henrietta Lacks, a black cancer patient whose cells, known as the HeLa cells, were taken by Johns Hopkins University without her consent in 1951. The family has now settled with a pharmaceutical company. We'll speak to University of Pennsylvania Professor Dorothy Roberts about the Henrietta Lacks case and other issues, including the criminalization of pregnancy following the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Stay with us. Beyonce. During our break, we're showing video from Friday's vigil at the New York City gas station where O'Shea Sibley was killed while voguing to Beyonce. The teenager charged with killing Sibley has been charged with murder as a hate crime. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show looking at the fight for reproductive rights. On Friday, a Texas judge ruled the state's abortion ban was too restrictive in cases of dangerous pregnancy complications. The judge also ruled doctors must be allowed to perform abortions in such instances without risk of criminal prosecution. But within hours of the ruling, Texas's attorney general's office filed an appeal effectively blocking the order. In July, the court in Austin heard testimony from women who sued Texas over its abortion ban. In a dramatic moment, one of the plaintiffs, Samantha Cassiano, vomited on the stand as she recounted her traumatic experience. Cassiano was forced to carry out her pregnancy even after receiving a diagnosis of anencephaly, a severe congenital disorder that results in a baby being born without portions of his brain and skull. Another plaintiff, Elizabeth Weller, spoke at a news conference.
I was sent home to wait for my baby to die or for my infection to start showing physical symptoms, even though they were already there. But I wasn't sick enough to get the care that I needed. There is no statement of pro-life in this state when you send me home to wait for my baby to die inside of me and for me to wait for myself to get to a point where I have to gamble my uterus and gamble my life and gamble any future possibility of becoming pregnant. That's not pro-life. In a sense, it's almost pro-torture.
The Texas lawsuit was brought by the Center for Reproductive Rights. It's believed to be the first lawsuit brought by women denied abortion since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last year. We're joined now by Dorothy Roberts, director of the University of Pennsylvania Program on Race, Science, and Society. She's long warned against the criminalization of pregnancy and has been called a pioneer in the reproductive justice movement. She's author of several books, including Fatal Invention, How Science, Politics, and Big Business Recreate Race in the 21st Century, and Killing the Black Body, Race, Reproduction, and the Meaning of Liberty. Professor Roberts, welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. Can you talk about the significance of the federal judge's ruling striking down a part of the Texas abortion ban?
It's good to be on your program. Thanks so much. I think this is a significant ruling in the sense that the testimonies of the women we just heard part of shows how cruel, in fact, I think the word of torture is appropriate, that bans on abortion are the kind of position they put doctors in, to have to gamble the lives of pregnant people in order to avoid prosecution. I think it's one of the most unethical, inhumane aspects of compelling births, which is what abortion bans do, is this way of completely devaluing the life of the pregnant patient and putting doctors in a position to decide how sick, how close to death should I let my patient go before I perform a needed medical procedure for fear of being prosecuted, fear of a crime. Now, having said that, I think it's also important to note that that is only one of the many, many cruelties, injustices of banning abortion. I think it is a mistake to just focus on cases where the patient's life is at risk, and to ban those portions or overturn those portions of laws restricting access to abortion or banning it completely. What these laws do is compel people to give birth. They are fundamental, atrocious violations of people's autonomy. And they are a form of misogyny against women, who are the main people who become pregnant, but also end up criminalizing pregnancy in general by any birthing people, or even potentially birthing people, are at risk of arrest and prosecution and incarceration if they don't meet the standard of the state for producing a healthy baby. Let me explain what I mean by that. We see, and we've seen for decades, this is something I warned about back in 1997 in my book, Killing the Black Body, that it's not only prosecuting women for terminating a pregnancy, but also prosecuting women who are accused of being pregnant and using drugs or some other conduct that the state claims is harmful to a fetus. And we've seen women incarcerated for stillbirths. These are women who wanted to give birth, but are now punished because they didn't produce a healthy baby. We see the excuse that the Supreme Court gave, that you could just turn over your child to a safe haven, turn over the baby for adoption. This idea that people can be forced to turn over their babies for adoption, which is a complete lie. It's false. Most women end up keeping their babies when they're prevented from terminating a pregnancy, only making their lives more their struggle to take care of their families, which puts them at risk of having their children taken from them. So I think this is an important victory, although it's been stayed on appeal, but an important victory for me because it shows the cruelty and torture of bans on abortion, but it doesn't capture the full extent of harm these bans should be overturned as unconstitutional altogether.
So I wanted to turn to Ohio. Tomorrow, Tuesday, Ohio residents will vote on a single statewide ballot item called Issue 1, which would raise the threshold to amend the Ohio Constitution from a simple majority to 60% of the vote. Republican state lawmakers introduced Issue 1 in order to make it harder for voters to enshrine abortion rights in the state's constitution when they vote on a proposed pro-choice amendment in the November general election. This is very interesting. It's a little convoluted. They're not voting on the abortion referendum tomorrow, but Republicans are trying to invalidate that referendum to be put to the Ohioans in November. It was funded by Richard Ellis Uline, who is from outside the state, an Illinois billionaire. Can you talk about the significance of what's taking place, this vote tomorrow?
Well, we're in a battle in this nation on this question of being free or being compelled to give birth, a question which we could trace all the way back to the institution of slavery, and a question that was on the ballot or on before Congress when it passed the Reconstruction Amendments, whether we're going to have a nation that's free or a nation that compels people to give birth for the benefit of the state. And so part of that battle is those of us who want a free nation where you can't be compelled to give birth and where there actually should be support for reproductive justice, support for our reproductive autonomy, are being then protested against and trying to put impediments for us to allow the people of states to protect the right to abortion. So this is a ploy by the political right wing and Republicans included to make it harder for the people of states to take legislative efforts to ensure the right to abortion. So, you know, when the Supreme Court says, well, what all we're doing is giving the freedom to states to decide the question of abortion, that's actually not true, because now you have the right wing trying to put barriers in front of people passing laws or amendments to constitutions that enshrine the right to reproductive freedom.
I should say Richard Uline and his wife, Elizabeth Uline, are billionaire business people, founders of Uline Conservative Donors. He is also heir to the Schlitz Brewing fortune. But I want to turn right now to a story you know well. The family of Henrietta Lacks, a prominent, a black cancer patient whose cells were taken by Johns Hopkins University Hospital without her consent in 1951, has reached a settlement over the unethical use of her cells with pharmaceutical company Thermo Fisher Scientific. Henrietta Lacks' family has denounced the racist medical system that allowed the biotech company to make billions in profit from the HeLa cell line. HeLa, Henrietta Lacks, which helped produce remedies for multiple diseases, including the first polio vaccine. Details of the settlement were not made public, but the plaintiff celebrated the lawsuit's resolution last Tuesday on Henrietta Lacks's birthday. This is her grandson, Alfred Lacks.
Our family member, our loved one, Henrietta Lacks, 103 years old today. And as Ben said, today, it couldn't have been a more fitting day for her to have justice.
Yeah.
For her family to have relief. It was a long fight. It was a long fight. Over 70 years. And Henrietta Lacks gets her day.
The Lacks family announced its lawsuit in 2021, 70 years to the day after Henrietta Lacks died. This is her granddaughter, Kimberly Lacks, speaking alongside attorney Ben Crump in 2021.
I think about my grandmother, as I said before, laying in that hospital room and how they came in there when she had radiation going through her body in horrific pain, but all they were concerned about was taking cell tissues from her body. Mm. That's terrible.
Terrible.
And then on top of that, no one in the family had any idea. They act like she was alone. They didn't reach out to her husband, her aunt, her cousins, anyone to let them know what was taking place. That's disgraceful. And that definitely is racism, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. She was treated horribly. My father, one thing I can say about him is he's a sweet man. And he always said that who wouldn't want a pocket full of money? Everybody wants